Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Uplifting Us regular weekly radio program. We welcome you this evening. Our subject is, what is the black tax and how can we remove this massive financial burden? Stay with us, hear more, and learn.
Will you give up your rhythm?
No. The rhythm makes my heart drop straight away.
Let go of the beat.
Once again, welcome. Welcome to Dare to Win. We have a sobering discussion about the imperative for black people to take control of the economics of our community, an exact methodology on building the economic machinery via a global cooperative family-centered economic model, and how to pass it forward to future generations. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. My name is Sister Nanana, and I am so pleased to be with you this evening. Our subject is, what is the black tax, and how can we remove this massive financial burden? We're here every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time to talk about these important subjects. And every Thursday, we have a guest that helps to guide us and lead us through the discussion and make sure that we cover the important aspects. And so with us this evening, we have Brother Shabaka, who is also an Uplifting Us board member, that's going to help us to hit the highlights on this particular subject of the black tax. Good evening, Brother Shabaka. How are you?
Good evening, Sister Nanana, and good evening to the listening family. I am very pleased, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity and inviting me to this show to talk about this particular subject.
Thank you so much for being with us, and this is going to be an exciting subject this evening. I'm sure it's one that most of us, even if we haven't used this particular terminology, the black tax, we're well familiar with it because in many aspects we have actually lived this life of understanding what the black tax is. So with that said, I'm just going to remind our listening audience that information concerning Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative can be found on our website, www.usliftingus.com. And if you care to join in the discussion, you can go on to that website and click on the Ulu Radio tab, then click on Listen Live to join us. You can also join the conversation by dialing 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789, and then press the number 1 on your keypad, and that will alert us here in the studio that you have a comment to make or a question to ask, and we'll certainly do our best to make time and create opportunity for you to do that. All right. With that said, let's move on, Brother Shabaka, and would you please get us started on this subject this evening? So, what is the black tax, Brother Shabaka? Give us some background and some context around that, would you please?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Thanks again, Sister Nanana, for the question and giving me the opportunity to engage in this conversation. And I welcome any comments, questions from the listening audience, because this is extremely important as a consequence, at least from my research. This is one of the main things that have really held us back, not over the years, but over the centuries. All right, the word black tax. As Sister Nanana said earlier, it is nothing new. It's basically sometimes jokingly comes out in a conversation of how black people are exploited for just being black. In other words, we're charged a little bit more for the goods and services that we seek, generally by people outside of our community, but then also by people inside of our community. However, some of us may not necessarily know the historical significance of the terms and how it has come to significantly traumatize dramatically as social and economic injuries are placed on us over the centuries. But first, let me deal with the two words, black. Black is nothing more than to signify people of African descent, regardless of what you call yourself, coon, colored, Afro-American, African-American, African descendant, and even the N-word. You fit, you're black. And this term is usually generally associated with black people, with many terms as we refer to here and globally. Now, on the other hand, listen to the word tax, and this is how Webster defined tax: a compulsory contribution to state revenue levied by the government on workers' income and, of course, business profits. In other words, if you as a worker, you work and you get income, a portion of that income, all right, goes to the state or goes somewhere. Also, if you're a business and you make a profit, you know, a portion of your profit is to go to the government. And that is so that the government can provide the services necessary for you as a worker to be employed and, of course, charter businesses so that they can engage in commerce. All right? So that's nothing new. But what is relatively new is that the income tax, which is the tax that if you are a worker you pay, that didn't really come about until 1913, the 16th Amendment. Prior to that, taxes was waged on businesses, you know, because they were the ones who were engaged in profits. Now, they weren't heavily hit, but taxes were given to them by the state. World War One comes about, and the amount of money that was received in taxes to pay for the war machinery was insufficient. So therefore, the government decides an income tax, and they tax the workers a lot heavier than they were taxing the business. So we get taxation on not only goods and services or profits that is made, but also on property and now income. The significant portion of that is that the tax is a compulsory contribution that is levied on workers' income. And we know that it's not necessarily a contribution, because if you're a worker in the United States, you know that the portion of your tax is already taken out before you get your check, or before it is demand deposited into any account. So the tax is already taken out. It's not necessarily taken out and given to the government immediately every two weeks. It is usually held by the institution. They invest it, you know, get a little bit of money from the investment, and then at a later date they turn it over when the state requires them to turn over the income, the taxes on the income of the employees that they have. So everybody gets a little dime, but now if the institution take the money from you and invest it and don't give you portion of it, that's almost like another tax, because you earned that, okay? It was with your money, all right, that they were able to deposit and in a sense make extra money on what you earned. So that's tax, and it was compulsory because that's what they do. You just probably didn't know about it. All right. In his book, Sean Rochester, who is the CEO of Good Steward LLC, shows how the black tax levied from conscious and unconscious black discrimination over the centuries. What this did was create massive financial burden on black households today and throughout, and dramatically reduce the household's ability, all right, to leave a substantial legacy for future generations. And this is something that Ulu talks about, leaving something, a foundation, all right, and a legacy for your children, your grandchildren, those yet who are not here, all right, such that it can sustain a community of people working collectively together. But now let me give you a couple bits of information again on today, and then I'm going to take us back a little bit, because all of this has its origin, all right, during the enslavement period since 1619 or before. Right now, there are approximately, right now, as I'm speaking right now, give or take a few, approximately 2.6 million black businesses in the United States. 2.6 million, hope I didn't say billion, million black businesses in the United States. 2.6, that's 2,600,000 black businesses that are operating right now, give or take a few. However, only 4% of that 2.6 billion have employees. Now, let me say that again, because, you know, you might have missed it. 4% of the 2.6 million black businesses have employees. So roughly 109,000 businesses, black businesses, have employees, essentially 2.5 million are sole proprietorships. Just a person trying to make ends meet with his business, paying taxes. Also, interestingly, of that 4%, or that 109,000 black businesses who have employees, they represent 70% of all revenue driven by black enterprises. Let me say that again, because you might have missed it. 4% of the 2.6, 109,000, represent 70% of all revenue driven by black enterprises. That is essentially saying that the 2.5 million of that 2.6 million are only responsible for 30% of the revenue driven. All right. Interestingly, that 109,000 black businesses employ about 1 million people. So essentially, on average, about 10 persons or 10 people per business. Most of them are black, but not all of them. All right, so some will come from out the community and not all of them. All right, so according to Sean Rochester, according to him, as a consequence of the low number of black businesses that are actually really production by having employees, and that's what we want. We want business to be able to hire members out of our community and then hopefully give them their American dream, whatever that means. All right. Currently, that's not happening. According to Sean Rochester, we have lost, or what's missing, is 6.3 million jobs and 1.4 million businesses, which we should have had. So of that 2.6, all right, if everything was equal, like the Europeans, we should have had an additional 1.6 million businesses, which would have accounted for 6.3 million jobs. He also goes on to say that if we looked at the collective balance sheet, what's missing is $8 trillion of net worth. $8 trillion of net worth. Now, you might have had those numbers thrown around but not really understanding. What are we talking about here? Well, let me give you an idea what $8 trillion look like. Well, in fact, let me give you an idea what $1 trillion look like. All right, trillion might be hard for us to conceive of it, but we can, let's bring it down a little bit closer. A million, we might be able to conceive of. If you can't conceive of a million, think of 100,000. You know that probably in 100,000 you can earn, if you're not a professional, you could probably earn that in a few years, so you can get 100,000. You multiply 100,000 by 10, you got a million. All right, take that million. And let's say that I give you that million every hour of the day for 365 days in the year. So I'm going to give you every hour $1 million, and I'm going to give it to you for the whole year, every hour of the day, 7 days a week. It would take you, if I continue that, in order for you to get $1 trillion, at least 135 to 140 years before giving you that $1 million to accumulate to $1 trillion. And then if I talk about $8 trillion, that means then you would have to take eight times that 135 to 140 years. That would tell you how much it would get just to get to $8 trillion. All right, the gross domestic product of the United States is only $20 million. Each year. So what Rochester is saying is that we've been robbed of $8 trillion over the course of several hundred years, all right, which we know the United States, which is a little bit more than double what we've been robbed. So that gives you an idea when you look at the socioeconomic plight of African people, why we're so poor. And why it is difficult for us to get ahead, you know, particularly if we're using the current apparatus of the state, which is designed to exploit and extract from us. Well, let's talk about this a little bit more. Let's bring it home now. Let's go back. Let's go back to the 4 million of black people who were around right after the Civil War. All right, right after the Civil War, the amount of money that was taken from black people just that one year, 1865, we were supposedly free just that 1 year, all right, for the amount of work that we did that 1 year in cotton and tobacco, $15 trillion. $15 trillion in today's money. If we just looked at that 1 year, just that 1 year. All right, that's 4 million. Today, 40 million of us, 40 to 45 million of us, all right, 40 to 45 million of us, our net worth is only 2% of that of the European. According to Dr. Claude Anderson, it's about 1.5% of what the European is. That's outrageous. So we're saying that, and that comes to about roughly about 1.5 trillion. Now, we had 15 trillion what we were worth based on that 1 year of production that we produce in cotton and tobacco in this country. All right, in today's figure. All right, and so right now we only 1.5 trillion. That's our net worth. So we were, if we had gotten what we were supposed to get, we would have been 10 times more richer or productive than what we are currently today. So we have basically gone backwards, although they didn't give us the money because we didn't get any money when we were enslaved. And in fact, after slavery, they still didn't give us any money. 1.5 trillion, all right, our net worth right now, according to Rochester, that's 45 million people. Back then, 4 million. All right, we was 15 trillion. You get an idea of the extent to which we've been robbed just looking at what we did that 1 year, 1865, when we produced, before we were freed, all right, and then since then up to the present time, 150-some years later, and our net worth as a community of folks is 10 times less than what it would have been then if we were given what we would have had. Now, I know that all of you have heard about the 40 acres and the mule thing that was promised to us as a consequence of giving intelligence to the Union Army, sabotaging the Confederacy when we had an opportunity, when we were lent out by the slave master, and doing everything to assure Union victory. And in fact, it wasn't really until we got involved that the Union began to win. And so, all right, they promised us 40 acres and a mule. All right, now I want you to do the math with me. I'm a mathematician, so I apologize for just throwing all these numbers at you. But you take 40 acres. There was 4 million of us. If you gave 40 acres to each person in 1865, that would come to 160 million acres. Sound like a lot, doesn't it? Well, the state of Texas is only 167 acres of land. So now you know why we didn't get those 40 acres. Can you imagine what we would have done owning the size of Texas or the states in the South? That's why we didn't get it. The Europeans did the math. He turned the land back over to the landowners, and he sharecropped the rest of us. Sister, let me stop here for a second, just in case you might have a question you would like to ask, or some of the listening audience might want to engage if any is ready to do that.
Well, thank you for the opening and the opportunity, Brother Shabaka. And what I would have to offer at this point is that it is truly mind-boggling when we look at all of the actual hard figures and numbers that are associated with the current financial status that we as African descended people find ourselves in, particularly here in the continental U.S., and to add to that the clarity around how this was very strategically planned and plotted, not only to be able to steal our labor, but to, on a regular and continuous basis, be able to extract from us constant and continuous financial gain directed towards those in positions of power, specifically to keep them in power and to keep us in the position that we have been in for quite a while. So it's one of those situations, I think, where you have to kind of take a real deep breath, especially, as you said, with you being a mathematician and sharing all of those numbers, to just kind of shake your head and say, okay, yeah, I get it now. That was really something else. So maybe where we are at this particular point, Brother Shabaka, is we're at the point where we're going to take a little break, and we will be back to our discussion this evening on the black tax. And we're going to be talking more about the economic destiny of our people, and the things that we can do to add to and to benefit that. So please stick and stay with us. We will be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, 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 oh. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. If we just let it be, na 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 na, the world won't get no better. We gotta change it, yeah, just you and me. Wake up, all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair.
Welcome back. Thank you for being with us. This is Dare to Win. This is the Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative regular Thursday night radio broadcast, where we have sobering discussions about the imperative for black people to take control of the economics of our community. An exact methodology on building the economic machinery via a global cooperative, family-centered economic model, and how to pass it forward to future generations. This evening, we're speaking with Brother Shabaka, who is a board member of Us Lifting Us, and we are talking about the black tax and what we can do in order to relieve ourselves of that and to take control of our economic destiny. So, Brother Shabaka, before the break, you were discussing how we were exploited by the slavery system. That was really very interesting and very eye-opening to actually look at the hard figures. Now, what does that have, all of that have to do with taxes? And, you know, take us a little bit further into the next steps of this discussion, if you will.
Thank you so much, Sister Nanana. I appreciate that. And I'll do my best to try to bring it all home. as before we left, I talked about the 40 acres of the mule, which was promised and not given. All right, so that means then that based on our the years in which we were enslaved, okay, and our assistance that we gave to the Union Army, they promised us, promissory note, all right, to give us 40 acres and a mule. They did the math and said, no, we're not going to give them, all right, the state of Texas, all right? And so they gave us nothing. That means they took it from us. Now, remember now, they had the power to be able to take it from us. They promised this amount of wealth, and then they took it back and extended it to the people whom they fought in the Civil War. So tax, remember now, is compulsory appropriation of income, but also income can be, you know, sort of like translated into wealth if you know what to do with it. So I'm going to use the term that the compulsory appropriation of wealth that we produce. All right, we produce information, we produce goods, all right, or products, all right, that was used on the European market. Africans produce in the South, just the South. I'm talking about any place else. All right, 80% of the cotton market, international cotton market, which was probably in Europe. All right, 80% during the Civil War that was disrupted. That's why they made the promise. All right, that's why they needed the help. They needed to get the economy back. All right, so they made the promise to Africans. All right, we're gonna give you, for the help that you've done for the years in which you had made this country rich, free labor now, that in and of itself, all right, was a tax, because we never consumed. We produced the wealth and didn't get compensated for what we produced. That's what they took it from us. And then we subsidized something else when they took it from us. All right, and so we subsidized Europe with the amount of money that was used in commerce with tobacco and cotton, which is what we produce, 80% of the markets, all right? We never got any of that. Nada. Nothing. All we got was a whip on the back, some hog moles to eat, and chitlins, which some of us still eating it, all right, and, you know, a couple rags to keep us warm when the weather got inclement down there in the South. That's all we got. So basically what they didn't give us, they took from us. That's the tax. They took from us what we produced, the income we didn't get. That's the tax. The wealth that we produced, we didn't get. They took it from us. That's the tax. I talked about the 40 acres and the mule, which would given us 160 million acres of land, very close to what the state of Texas area that it consumes right now. If we just held on to that, if they gave it to us and we held on to it and said we wanted to sell, let's say, a fourth of the 160 acres, you know, 40 million acres. You know what an acre is going for on average in today's market? $3,160 per acre. Now, you take 40 million, if we wanted to sell 40 million, and multiply that times $3,160 per acre, you know, it would be surpassed the gross domestic product of a few countries in the Western world. All right, so I'm trying to give you a picture that what we didn't receive, all right, was a compulsory appropriation of what we produce. That's the tax. We never got it. All right, everybody else prospered from that as a consequence of what we produce. Not only the United States, all of Europe just about. All of Europe just about, and the United States. So people are talking about reparations. We need to get reparation from everybody, you know, in the Western world, because they owe it to us. All right. So that in itself produced that now everybody might say, well, Shabaka, the Civil War is over, slavery is over. We don't have those things right now. We even have some millionaires and billionaires. Yeah, we probably got a few of them, you know, in the millions. But remember now, there's 45 million of us, 40 to 45 million of us. All right, so even if we got billionaires and millionaires, that might not necessarily attribute too much to when you look at this. Now, after the war, 1865, all right, the Europeans instituted Jim Crow. All right. Now, for those who've been to the South, still remember some of their roots, you have an idea where Jim Crow was, you know, the European who got his land returned back to him. They didn't give it to us. That's the tax. They didn't give it to us. We subsidized the North giving back the land to the Southern planters. All right. So we didn't get it. They didn't give it to us. So they gave it back to the Southern planters, who divided it in shares, all right, and then gave us plots. And you might say, well, why didn't the African leave? I mean, that wasn't a fair deal. I mean, since they promised they didn't give it to us, why didn't we leave? With what? We had no money. We barely had the shoes that we could walk with. We had nothing. The Europeans didn't give us anything. All right. So we were forced to stay on the land. I want you to get the picture now. 1865, we're not given anything. We weren't even given a dollar. According to Dr. Claude Anson, he says, in addition to the 40 acres and a mule, all right, the mule used to plow the land, the 40 acres was the land that we would plow, and $100, that's what he claims, all right, that they also promised us so we could buy the seeds, all right, so that we could buy enough supplies to hold us over. $100 went a long ways then. All right, until the harvest. We didn't get that. Another tax. All right, so Jim Crow comes in. Sharecropping comes in. Didn't have very much education. All right, there was a few that looked at the books of the master and interpret what he was doing, and was able to develop the mathematical skills and commerce skills to get some, but it was a very few. And also some, let me go back a little bit. Also during this period of time, we had about some people who were called or classified as freedmen. What happened is that when the Native Americans, the so-called five civilized tribes, were forced westward, they grabbed some Africans, all right, and then in 1865, 1866, all right, Africans did receive some land, all right, in the Oklahoma Territory. As a consequence of that, everybody has heard of Tulsa, Oklahoma, all right, how that was built. Well, that was built as a consequence of the land, so we did get some of that back until the white boy found out there was oil there. Another tax. He took it back. Okay. All right, so we've had opportunities. They've taken it back. All right. Everything that he's taken back, he's able to circulate among himself, other Europeans, other European Americans here, and therefore sustain the wealth that we create. And we created just about, we laid the foundation and created wealth for just about everybody, all right, in the European world. So here is the sharecropping. You couldn't go anywhere, and then you had to wait. So what the former master did, all right, was give us a plot of land. He would give us a few dollars so that we could get the seeds, give us so we could get the tools. Now he's giving us, he's lending this to us. He's not giving us anything. That's a long terminology I was using. He's lending this to us. So then when the harvest comes, all right, then we got the cotton or the tobacco, if we're in the, you know, in the eastern southern states. All right, we got that, and then we're going to take this to market. But we don't take it to market because the market is the planter. He's the one that has the land. We have to take it to him. And then he sets the rate. Do you understand it now? We plant the cotton, harvest the cotton, collect the cotton, we take it to the market. The market is the southern planter who we have to negotiate with. All right, he sets the terms or the rates by which he's going to pay us. And oftentimes, it turns out that we're in debt because what he claims is that he supplied us during the period when we weren't planning to hold us over until we was the planning period and then the harvesting. And so that amounted to debt. So he then carried that debt over to the following year. And we found ourselves continuously worse off than we did probably when we were enslaved. You know, but it was the same thing.
Continuously in debt is what it sounds like, for sure.
Continuously in debt because you never got a leg up.
And right. Brother Shabaka, I see that we do have a listener who would like to either ask a question or make a comment.
Sure.
So at this time, let's open the mic for this listener and see. All right, listener 5921, would you tell us your name and where you're calling from, please?
Yes, this is Abdul Nix. I'm calling from Chester, Pennsylvania. And I
noticed.
Greetings, brother.
How you doing?
Okay.
We're doing well, thank you.
Doing well? Okay, great. Great conversation. I just wanted to just ask a question about the gentleman Tunis Campbell. You familiar with Tunis Campbell? Born and raised in Georgia, the Georgia senator during the Reconstruction period.
I'm not familiar. Why don't you tell us about him a little bit?
Okay. Yeah, he basically did the same thing that you're talking about tonight. Like, I guess he is one of the ones who's given land and taken back eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Tunis Campbell. Yeah, he went through a whole. And I think you can locate him if you just look up St. Catherine's Island.
Yeah, in the Gullah Geechee area. Yeah, I will look that up. I really appreciate that. Yeah, area, a lot of land is being lost right now. But go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, I was just I was thinking he was like one of the same incidences that you were explaining. He went through the same thing. He had a constitution, an army, and everything until they took it back.
Mhm.
Yeah, I just thought I'd just throw that out there also.
I appreciate
that,
and I'll make a point to try to get
that certainly can.
Go ahead, sister. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that certainly can make for some very interesting research around that particular individual, and thank you so much for offering that information for us. We appreciate
okay,
that.
Great. Yes, thank you.
All right, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, brought up, it's very important how they took things back, and particularly, well, we created, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, let me just divert for a moment, a lot of wealth, a lot of businesses that developed, and they took them back. But I understand, in 1921, when they devastated us, we were lending Europeans money and stuff like that. And we had the banks. They didn't prosper because they was mostly looking at it was the color of their skin. They thought that was sufficient. And it wasn't sufficient. We had learned the trade. We brought a lot of stuff when we left the South over to the Oklahoma area. And we had prospered. And we had prospered so much that it instilled a little bit of jealousy, in the other communities. And so they took it back. They raided it. But I understand that, 5-6 years later, we attempted to rebuild and did rebuild some of that. And they took it again. So we need to address this question of, always having the greatness that we produce, the wealth that we produce, and then have it. We gotta hold on to it a little bit better. But let me get to the Jim Crow thing a little bit, because that was an important period in this nation's history in how they extracted wealth from us and retained it, all right, and then just transferred it, you know, to different things, from insurance companies to banks, all right, to shipping, and all of the industry that is created right now is a consequence of that period of time when they had so much money and led the world. All right, that's why, you know, a small nation like the United States only became, you know, a country, you know, around the early 1800s, late 1700s, all right? And then in that small period of time became one of the richest nations in the world. Well, how did they do that? Well, because they extracted the wealth that was created by the people that they kidnapped from the African continent. That's how they were able to do it. Now, suppose you didn't like the terms of the sharecropping arrangement because you were constantly in debt, okay? And you said it's time, you want a new contract. He says, no, I got the old contract. Well, you say, I'm not working under these conditions. Well, he signed the contract. You violated the contract. You're going to jail. You get the picture now? You're going to jail. All right, so you violated the contract. The sharecropper violated the contract. He was taken and imprisoned. Obviously, because he had a family, he couldn't do that. A lot of folks chose not to, but there were some who were determined they were not going to support this kind of system, which exploited their labor, gave them nothing. They worked hard out in the field, and they got none of the benefits from the tremendous amount of work that they were doing. They was always in debt. All right, so they went to jail. They went to jail. All right, I ain't doing anything. You got to feed me. Yeah, you're right. They did feed you. All right? They call it convict leasing. That's what they fed you. So they leased you out. You're a convict in prison. The institution, that prison institution, leased you out back to the farm that you refused to work for. Now, let me say that again, because I know that went by maybe a couple people. You refused to work at sharecropping. You said, you're not doing this anymore. The deal is off. It's wrong. You go to jail because you violated the contract, okay? All right, you refused to work, convict leasing. The institution that you was in prison leased you off to go back to the farm that sent you to jail in the first place because you refused to work under those conditions. Catch 22, we couldn't get out of it. It was for the hard work of some of our brothers and sisters who were able to accumulate some monies during the enslavement period, some monies after the enslavement period based on their skills, all right, who went north and then funneled some money back so some of their family members and community members could follow. That's why you had in Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, people going up to Indianapolis, Indiana, Chicago, Detroit, got roots in the South, all right. Usually in Louisiana and Texas, they run over to Oklahoma, Colorado, to the West Coast. And, of course, people in Georgia, South Carolina, they shoot up to Washington, Baltimore, Philly, New York. All right, that's the track, because those conditions, that Jim Crow structure and the convict leasing, you know, still made them slaves. All right, and as a consequence of that, as a convict, you got no money. That money that you made went to the prison, all right? As a sharecropper, the amount of money and wealth that you produced, all right, went back to the landowner. So you got nothing, all right? Let's bring it home. We're getting back up, all right? According to, again, Brother Rochester, he says as a consequence of that, again, we lost about $16 trillion. Now we're, you know, in today's dollars. So we're getting up to the gross domestic product of the U.S., all right, $16 trillion. And that was as a consequence of Jim Crow, all right, starting from 1865 up to the present time. Now, in education, let's take a look at that. All right, separate and highly unequal, separate and highly unequal. Consequently, there's the other tax. We were supposed to be citizens, but they was taking money and giving us less money. That means they were taking money from us, which should have gone to us, and they was going to the European population, all right? All right, so they had a better education, technically, all right? And they were able to manage and do things and employ us if they wanted to us, and we had to work. But the mere fact that the money, separate and unequal, was taken from us that was supposed to go, and in some of those places, we were majority population. See, we didn't leave the South. We were the majority population in the South. But during our migration away from there because of the harsh condition of Jim Crow after the Civil War, all right, we left, all right? And therefore, we're still a sizable population in the South now, you know, 30, 40%. But we know we were over 50% of the population before we left. But anyway, looking at the education, separate and unequal, meant that we didn't get the resources that the European population that was taken from us, what was taken from us and then transferred and subsidizing another community, all right, that didn't invest in our community. There's the other tax. Brother Rochester says, when you look at that, $3 trillion we lost in that. Then he goes on and, you know, bringing up to the down the FHA in housing, and a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm going to just give you the numbers. He goes over in details how you extract these numbers. All right, we lost $4.2 trillion in housing. I don't know if you add these things up, how much money you were supposed to be getting. All right, if you take a look at how they ripped us off, exploited us in the GI Bill, $1.2 trillion, and the number goes on and on. Consequently,
I see.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, it's very clear that this was a system built and designed specifically to continually take advantage of us in every way possible. So, you know, Brother Shabaka, what does the economic future of our community look like, and what are the options that we have for us to move forward?
Thank you so much, sister, because that's really where I wanted to go. I wanted to give everybody, if I gave you a bleak picture, that was my intention, that the economic future for us is death, economic death. We cannot continuously have money and wealth drained from us and exist, because it is the economic activity producing wealth that allows you to be able to prosper and allow that community to prosper. All right. And so, well, how does that happen? Well, we are educated, all right, to actually leave our communities and go and provide skills and services and create wealth for others. We have to now return and bring that to us. We're 40 to 45 million people strong. All right. And we spent, you know, $1.3 trillion, all right, just a portion of that, you know, a few hundred billion dollars is enough to start some economic activity, all right, here. We have to sustain it and not have it fly out. And ULU provides a model for that to happen, all right, with his family. Excuse me. I'm sorry. All right, ULU provides a model with its cooperative economics, family-centered cooperative economics, because what it provides is that here you have resources, as opposed to allowing the banks and the other institutions to exploit that, because once it goes out, you know, pennies come back. Keep the resources in the community, or keep the resources in the neighborhood, so that we can form communities. All right, we don't have community; we have neighborhoods. We'll keep the money into the neighborhood so that we can form communities. How you do that? By building wealth, by pooling your resources, and then identifying. Once you have sufficient number of resources, identifying those enterprises, business enterprises, commercial enterprises, all right, which will assist you, all right, in developing the kind of stabilization that you always dreamt of. Now, you have to decide, what do I want to put this money, what kind of business do I want to create? Well, one of the things that it should do is, one, it should provide jobs for people who don't have jobs. We got to do better than the 2.5 million businesses out here that is self-employed. You know, we got 109,000 that employs people, but we have to have more than that. All right, so we need businesses to employ, and of course, those businesses must be able to derive a profit. And why is that? Because, see, the profit allows for the redistribution, the money coming back into you. So you can earn money as a owner and worker, but at the same time, dividends as a consequence of the profit that you helped to create. That's what Ulu is trying to do. So the money stays in the pot. All right, now Ulu is international. So that don't mean that we need to just stay here in the United States in terms of commerce. All right, we have members. We've got over 620, 30 members, you know, and some of those members are in different countries. On the African, which is the richest, still the richest continent, over a century and a half of exploitation of its resources, but it's still the richest continent on the face of the earth. We still have skilled laborers from here and the continent. All right, so we just need to pull our resources and then identify the kind of businesses and commerce that we want, and then begin to start talking and trading with each other across the Atlantic, all right, across the Caribbean, Central and South America. All right, Brazil has 90 to 110 million people of African descent. They just down the road. All right, so we have the people to be able to develop an economy, all right, in which we can put and sustain the machinery that allows for the legacy that I talked about a little earlier. All right, so Ulu has this and it's laying it out. And as you said earlier, let me give the website, because I know that we're running out of time. The website is Us Lifting Us. For those members who here, maybe here for the first time, for those members who have been to the website, which we are remodeling, go back. All right. You don't want to be a victim of the black tax. All it does is drain you. There is no future. I don't care if we have billionaires and a millionaire. All right. So we got a few million of those. All right, but it's 45 million of us here that is not millionaires. But we can become extremely wealthy as a collective, all right, when we pull our resources and keep it within our community. All right, Us Lifting Us. All right, uslifting.com. Go there. Look at what we have to offer. You have questions? I want you to have questions. Contact us, call us. 404-592-2780. All right. If somebody doesn't pick up, we'll get back to you. That's 404-592-2780. Send us a message. We want to hear from you at info@uslistingus.com. That's info@uslistingus.com. All right. Get involved. We are starting probably July, the end of July, early August. An academy. The academy will give you more details on how the Ulu plan works. It'll give you some preliminary information on business structure. It will tell you about the system that we currently live in. It's called capitalism, if you didn't know. All right. It's capital based, all right, not people based. All right. Ours is cooperative, family centered, people based. We're going to give you that. All right, and then so with that, you will be armed with being able to assess your community environment, hook up with black businesses, begin to dialogue about economy, create relationships with those businesses, all right, help to promote those businesses that are providing good services and products, all right, have them become part of Ulu. This is what we want you to do. All right, the time we got to stop being victimized by the black tax, which has been here since we were brought here from the continent, and it's still with us. You go out to the bank, that's a black tax. You go to the job, then you got a black tax. You go into a European Asia, well, really, the Asia's doing more Asian and do it more so than now. You go there, you get robbed, black tax, all right, because they think that you don't have any brains, all right, and they'll try to rob you, all right. Sister, do you have anything else that you wanted to add, or I know I've been talking a lot. I don't want
to
monopolize
the
conversation.
Thank you so much, Brother Shabaka. What I would have to add is a big thank you for all of the information and the very eye-opening details that you have provided for us this evening to really break down to the most minute point to help us to understand what has actually happened to us as African-descended people since we have been here to position us in the financial plight that we find ourselves in right now, and how our labor, our ingenuity was very strategically taken advantage of, and that we were positioned time and time and time and time again, generation after generation after generation, various systematic things that were put in place to keep us in the position of feeding, literally feeding and providing for others who were, when you get right down to it, living off of us is basically what it has amounted to. So I appreciate the time and the energy and the expertise that you've put into the subject this evening. And I want to extend an invitation for everyone who has been listening this evening to come back and be with us again next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, when we will once again at Dare to Win have another discussion about the imperative for black people to take control of the economics for our community. Thank you so very much for being with us, and we will see you again next Thursday. Peace and love to everyone.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can.